Blog Talk Radio.
Black Bag Productions, located in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area, is a full-service event planning company that treats you and your clients like A-list celebrities. From the selection of your design and creation of your invitation to the last goodbye and thank you for attending, they help you put love into the details without sacrificing quality. Give them a call today at 240-472-9432. Visit blackbagproductionsonline.com, and they'll show you how they can create an unforgettable event for you.
Good Saturday morning, and welcome to our kickoff show for the fall. You know, I had a busy summer, and I think like many people, we were so excited about being able to get outdoors after the year and a half of just being stuck inside and not being able to do a whole lot. And you know, we had been away for a long time and came back with a few new guests, our dear friend Debbie J, talking about fashion and how to refresh your closet with some new things from Cabbie. And then you met my dear friend Vinay Fowler and her daughter, Azara, who talked to us about Party in a Box and how Azara came up with this. Now, in case you didn't know, Azara is 13 years old, and when she was 12, which was, you know, just 9 months or so, just a couple of months ago, she had decided, after helping her mom and I create Party in a Box for my law firm, she wanted to do her own Party in a Box business, and it took off. 12 years old. Crazy, right? Well, she's going to be back with us just in about 2 weeks. The summer has been a little busy for the 13-year-old. She kind of took a break, and so did we, quite honestly. Last week, I was in New Jersey visiting my friends that I grew up with and celebrating a dear friend's birthday in Atlantic City. And in case you're wondering, yes, I did win at the slots, $38. Woohoo! So it was a good time had by all. But today, I am super psyched because I am bringing back a guest who has been here before. And if you've been following me for all these years, you know I have unusual guests, and this is no different. Daryl Forney was with us before to talk about silver and fine silver. And if you missed that show, go way back a few years and you'll find that. But today he's not talking about silver. He's talking about things that glitter. And he's going to talk to us about vintage fashion. He collects it, the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and custom couture, and some contemporary designs from the 1920s. Through the 1990s. Now, if you're a fashionista, then you know vintage fashion, really good vintage fashion, is hard to come by. But Daryl is going to talk about how he got started with his collection and how he's presenting it to people who are interested. He also collects vintage jewelry, mostly pre-1980s designs, period styles, and unique contemporary designs. He offers consulting services to people if they're interested in figuring out what's going to make that fashion unique. So if you have questions for him today, please call in at 516-595-8153, and we'll try and answer your questions. Of course, you can always listen live online here at blogtalkradio.com/Black Bag Productions. Now, before I bring Daryl on, I want to tell you that he has a web tradacy, and I probably am destroying the pronunciation of that, but we'll make sure to get that. And one of the featured items on his bag, on his site, are beautiful, just absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous dresses and just unique items that you just can't find anywhere, but you can find them with him. And so he's got beautiful jewelry pieces, watches, bags. There's a beautiful Hermes bag, and there's just a lot. So I want to tell you to get your cup of coffee, get a pastry, or just have breakfast with us. And if you have questions, call in at 516-595-8153. We're going to take a super short break and we'll be back with Daryl Forney.
Hi, Kim. Can you hear me?
Hi, Daryl. I sure can hear you. We are on live, and thank you so much for taking time out of your Saturday to join us. It was so good to hear from you. It was such a great surprise to hear back from you on LinkedIn. And if people are thinking LinkedIn is not a place where they can connect with folks, I have news for you. It is the best, because Daryl and I have connected over LinkedIn for many years. I can't believe we've known each other as long as we have.
Yeah, I know, time does fly.
It does.
Well, I want to say quickly, I want to first and foremost give my thanks to you, Kim, for allowing me back on your show.
I think
it's been right around maybe... Say, I think we started each other. We know each other from the BET Honors Program, and I started, I believe,
exactly.
with that in about 2016. But quickly, to those who know Kim, to those maybe who are first tuning in, it's been about maybe 5 to 6 years that I've gotten to know Kim, and I would have to tell you that Kim is one of the consummate professionals. That word is sometimes used a lot with people, but it truly applies to Kim. But also to with Kim, the one thing and one of the things about her that I've come to witness and see is that not only a consummate professional, Kim is one of those types of people when you are interacting with her, as the old saying, and I think Maya Angelou said, you know, when people show you who they are, believe them. And what Kim and what Kim shows you is someone that when you deal with Kim, you have to be prepared to understand that Kim will give you sound advice. And she will tell you exactly what it is. You don't have to worry about whether or not there's some other type of meaning. Basically, the old saying, she says what she means and means what she says. So it's wonderful to deal with someone such as Kim. But also to the listeners who are out here, quickly, I want to thank those who are listening in. If you're a regular on Kim's show, you know how great a show she has. And I just want to thank you for giving me time on your Saturday morning where you could be doing something else to tune in to this broadcast.
And so just so my listeners know, no, the check is not in the mail for him to say all those nice things.
I'll have to apply for the bank loan come Monday.
The check is definitely not in the mail, but I so appreciate your kind words. Thank you so much. Well, let's dive right into how you got started with collecting vintage fashion. Tell me about that.
Well, before I do that, may I say one thing? And I want to make sure that to those who are out there who are the listening audience, my focus is to share information for the listeners. Those in this area may remember the department store that was called Sims, and that was owned by Sim and Marcia Sims. And their tagline was something that I always remember. He always, because he did the commercials, he would say, "An educated consumer is our best customer." And I think that is what my purpose here today is, to help inform those who are out there who may know about vintage or those who have seen the word vintage thrown about. So my goal here today is to share information to help you become the most informed, possibly customer, and a customer of mine.
Well, that is for sure. And I have to tell people that if you go to, and how do you pronounce, is it Tradesy? Is that the correct way to pronounce that?
Actually, it's Tradesy, Tradesy.
Trade C. Okay.
Yes.
See, the little Lutheran school girl wants to pronounce all of the, you know, letters in the name. But tell us about what people can expect when they're looking for vintage fashion. And I think when we originally had talked, I had told you that, you know, my mom used to look at W and Women's Wear Daily all the time. And, you know, she was certainly way ahead of her time in terms of looking at those kinds of things. But talk about how that is for folks.
Well, you first asked me about how did I get into this, and quickly, just for me, the personal background is that, you know, when you are a little kid, you start being asked, well, what is it that you want to do in life? Or you realize, hey, I'm going to have to get a job one day to support myself.
Right.
Basically, I'm from the South. I grew up in a family where there are 9 children. I grew up with 6 sisters, and I have 2 other brothers. But I grew up in that time period of the late 60s, early 70s, where it was impressed upon me, the women in my life, where many of those women, the older women, that was a time period when women, you know, when they left the house, they dressed in a certain manner. And even particularly on Sunday services, definitely when you're going to church, you would see women and men too in what we call our finery. So that impressed upon me that clothing, not making it a obsession where you have too much to the point you're like a hoarder, but clothing is an expression of who you are. And I think that when we interact with people, we want ourselves to not so much be perceived in a way that we need your approval, but that clothing imparts a part of who you are to people, and people get to know you. So I initially, one of the first things that came to my mind that I thought was I wanted to be, I did not know the word at the time, but I just knew that fashion was something that was very unique, and remember very beautiful women growing up. So I had desire to be a fashion designer, but which I know, later became to know I really wanted to be what they called an haute couturier. And there is a, and so that was something I really wanted to do for quite a period of time. But at a certain point in time, I realized that that was not going to be my profession, but I always maintain an interest in fashion. And then fast forward several years ago, I actually purchased a piece that was a vintage piece. And that started me realizing that I always knew that fashion was there, but the vintage market. And that started me in my collection of purchasing and acquiring vintage items. And when I grew up, naturally, the fashion designers at that time were, you know, Pierre Balmain. Balenciaga had just passed. I was a young child when he passed, but the name of Balenciaga, Christian Dior, Yves Saint Laurent, and people of that nature. So that's who I looked to for my inspiration, because those were the big names then. So I focus primarily on the styles from the 1950s, the 1960s, and the 1970s, because that is true vintage. And I want to just real quick, may I get some definitions, Kim?
Sure.
We've heard, I'm sure many people have heard the word vintage. Everybody throws the word vintage out because vintage is now a hot commodity. You know, anything becomes the new thing. Everybody wants to dive into it, and people start throwing the word out. But quickly, in general, when you use the word vintage, it just means something that was produced in the past that is typical of the period or era in which it was made. For example, when you say the word 1920s, everybody can go and Google and see the flapper dresses and the things that women wore. So that's what vintage means. That's something from the 1920s. At the minimum, to be called vintage, it must be at least 20 years old. But there are also, too, in the vintage fashion world, you have what you call your purist, people who don't necessarily accept things that are at least 20 years old. So there are two words. There's old vintage. And old vintage is basically that from the 1920s to the 1970s. And new vintage is in essence 1980s to 1990s, because the 1990s are qualifying for that 20-year period. So those are two definitions, just the general definition of what vintage is. And there has to be a clarification, because when you say something is antique, you know, in the strictest sense, the difference between antique and vintage is the age of the item. If something... to be qualified as an antique, the item must be at least 100 years old. So we're getting into that point where items from the 1920s you know, or basically becoming 100 years old. So
which is scary by itself, just,
I know.
You know, just hearing that.
Right. So in essence, something from 1900, a fashion from 1900, that's going to be considered an antique as opposed to vintage. And with that, I'll say that in the world of fashion, when it comes to vintage, in regards to your audience members out there, I hope that those definitions help them understand, you know, what really is vintage.
Well, that helps me understand because I have seen stores where they will say vintage clothing or vintage mm-hmm. furnishing mm-hmm. or, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm mm-hmm. thinking, well, vintage, really? Is there a, you know, is there a cutoff for that? And
yes.
if you are an HGTV nut like I am, and even mm-hmm. my dog is, yeah, my dog, that's a whole other thing. But that my dog watches HGTV, yes. And you'll hear them throw that around. And then when you see the pieces, you're like, well, that doesn't really look like it's more than, you know, 10, 15 years old.
Correct.
So it's great hearing that there are very specified definitions for that.
Correct.
Now, the other thing that I have found fascinating just in looking at your website is seeing items that are magazine drop-dead gorgeous. And, you know, you look at it and you go, wow, that's really nice. And then you look at how much it costs and goes, okay, that's super nice. And super is probably not even adequate to describe.
Okay. Well, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I will say is that this is something for me as a person. I think in times in our lives, we have to leave behind what others may be thinking or saying, but say, okay, this is who I am and this is who I know I am. So
mm-hmm.
the one thing that I had to come to realize, and not so much accept, but to say this is who I am, is that having wanted to be an haute couturier, that meant that I was going to be dealing in the highest level of fashion and those things related to it, which are very high price point items. And
mm-hmm.
that kind of segues into my next thing that kind of is another definition session, and I hope people don't mind, but could we kind of talk about two other definitions that I think are quite important? And that
okay.
is the word, those are the words couture and haute couture, because I think once again, with social media, with you know, heavy emphasis on movie stars and recording artists and people at those high level, when you're watching the award shows and you're watching the Emmys, you're watching the Oscars, you may hear that, or you're just with so much media around today, you
right.
hear the word couture and haute couture, where those are two similar words, but there are distinctions. Those are French words, and in essence, couture means literally in French, translate into dressmaking, sewing, or needlework. That's couture.
Okay.
But then there is the word haute couture, and that literally means high sewing, high dressmaking, or high fashion. So in the world of fashion and at the higher end, a couture piece may be a piece that it's the next best level when it comes to fashion in the fashion world. So you may have a couture piece. But then haute couture is what they call high fashion. And haute couture garments are always made for one person, which means that that is literally the only one of its kind in the world. And it's made specifically for that work, that person's measurements and body shape.
Mm-hmm.
And haute couture is like drugs. The Food and Drug Administration regulates
mm-hmm.
drugs. Well, in Paris, there is an organization called the Chambre Syndicale de la Haute Couture. It is the body that was created to regulate haute couture fashion. And you have to be approved to be in that syndicate. And haute couture means this, is that everything starts and ends in Paris. So an haute couture outfit means that mainly haute couture is for women, that that woman has to fly to Paris or come to Paris. Her measurements have to be made in Paris. There is a minimum of at least two fittings where she goes back to have the, you know, the fittings refined, and that everything about that outfit has to be done in Paris completely. If it's not,
wow,
then it cannot be called haute couture.
Wow.
And that word is thrown out there so much, but there is a regulated body that regulates what's called haute couture. And really, there's only about, there's no more than 50 to 75 members of that body. There are exceptions. The fashion designer Valentino, the fashion house of Versace, they are based in Rome, but because they're like one of the two or three or five exceptions where that it may not be made in Paris, but they still have to be a member of the Chambre Syndicale de la Haute Couture. So I just want people to understand that. And lastly, is that considering the amount of time and money and skill required to make an haute couture piece, you're talking about pieces that are extraordinarily expensive because they are handmade. Everything is done by hand. So you're talking about pieces that are a blouse. An haute couture blouse may cost $1,000 or $2,000. But an haute couture gown, that could cost a minimum of $10,000 to $20,000, and some of them can be $100,000. That is what haute couture is. So I hope people find that a little bit more helpful when the word is being thrown out there. And with haute couture, quite frankly, those who are the clients of haute couture, there's only about 1,000 women in the world who are able to buy haute couture because of the extraordinary expense involved in it. So I hope that those definitions help people understand that that in the world of fashion, there are different levels, and what you may hear a lot being thrown out on shows, what it really means.
And I'm glad you said thrown out on shows, because I was about to segue right to that. Because, you know, in working events as we do, we're, and especially working production and working backstage, mm-hmm. we know what it's like to be on carpet. And mm-hmm. we see the gowns come out. And what people don't often know is that the gowns that people wear on carpet may not necessarily be gowns that they own. Oh. They may be lent those gowns, and they're lent the jewels. And this is especially true of the higher level award shows. You often mm-hmm. hear them talking about, oh, she's wearing this and she's got this jewelry on, and then you see the interview with the celebrity, and they're like, yeah, they were nice enough to let me wear this. And people don't get that, yeah, they don't own that piece.
Well,
they're wearing it for the night.
Right. I want to be real careful, because I not so much want to cause offense to anyone, but you bring out a very good point. And it's kind of a reflection of the age we're in, because
right.
in those days, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the women, whether they were women of great wealth or even movie stars, they bought their items.
Yes, yes.
For example, Elizabeth Taylor.
Yes.
Elizabeth Taylor, when it came to her clothes, she bought all of her haute couture.
That's,
she bought it.
That's right.
Now, when it came to her jewelry, she had a lot of men who loved her who gave her very expensive things.
Exactly. So she was smart. She didn't buy her jewelry. She let somebody else buy it for her.
There you go. But back in those days, from, say, the 80s on back, those women, there's a word socialite is used so often, but really, again,
mm-hmm.
it's overused. But back in the days of the 50s, the 60s, and 70s, the socialites, who were the Rockefellers, the DuPonts, and women of great wealth such as that, people like C.Z. Guest and Keith Slim, these women bought their haute couture. There is one lady in France, she is the Countess Jacqueline de Rives, and she became a fashion designer. These women bought their their item. They owned it, as opposed to today, where you see a lot of, you know, quote, famous people, they want things to be lent to them, and they don't buy them. And that kind of wrinkles the people in the fashion world, and that's a very good point.
Yeah. Well, and it also sets up the facade that they have gotten something that was made just for them,
or they have
an eye for fashion when in fact they probably don't. And there are literally a handful of celebrities today that really do always bring it to the carpet. They always bring it, even when they're wearing jeans, they look fantastic.
Correct.
And so, you know, what I hate is when people are going with influencer looks.
I'm going to let you say.
Yeah. The whole influencer look, and it's like, oh, well, she was wearing it, so it has to be fabulous. Well, not really, because she didn't exactly wear it well, and it wasn't designed for a body like hers. So if it wasn't designed for a body like hers.
I'm going to let you, as I said to the audience members, Kim says what she means, and she means what she says. So I'm going to let Kim
But I'm saying,
the one thing I want to emphasize, and I truly want to emphasize this, because I hope maybe that in the next segment we can say, well, I want to talk about my business and some key pointers. But one of the pointers that I want to state to everyone, because again, as I said, my goal here is to share information to inform people, because again, many people may have heard the word vintage and do not know what it really means, and I hope those definitions I gave out to you earlier help. So you may say, I want to know what vintage is, and maybe I want to start buying vintage. And I want to emphasize to everyone, again, as I said, because I wanted to be a couturier, an haute couturier, that meant that I was wanted to deal at the highest level of fashion, where garments were going to be tailor-made for one specific person, and it was the only kind in the world, and the accessories that go with that. But that is not the whole vintage market. The vintage market, in essence, as I say, vintage is items that are at least 20 years old, but I really would have to say that, really say that 30, anything 30 years and back is really vintage. So I want to emphasize that why I like vintage, and that's whether that's vintage jewelry, vintage handbags, vintage accessories, vintage luggage. I mean, anything from those, you know, furniture, vintage furniture, is because quality. And that's what I want to emphasize. Vintage does not mean you have to be looking for or buy couture or haute couture. With vintage, it's craftsmanship and quality you're seeking. And that's the key, because we all have budgets. And I want to emphasize is that whatever your budget is, if you learn and can be taught about vintage, you can grab some great pieces. For example, I'm certain that I bought it. I was at a thrift store, and it was wintertime, and this was about a year ago. I bought a winter coat. It was from the 70s. This coat was about between 1972 and 1975. And I want to make sure that men understand that vintage, there is a market for you in vintage. I started out with collecting vintage clothing, and then recently I began to collect men's clothing because I was finding these pieces and no one was buying them. But
right.
I want to emphasize that jacket that I bought, it was made between 1972 and 75. It was a winter jacket. The man who owned it never used it. He had kept it for all of those years, and possibly this was someone who became older and the family donated the materials, or maybe he died and the family donated those materials.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know the label that was inside who retailed it?
No.
It was retailed by Sears and Roebuck. Everybody remember Sears, the department store?
Yeah.
But see, I want to emphasize that. I bought that jacket. I paid quite literally pennies for it. But my point about vintage is that you're seeking craftsmanship and quality. That coat that I bought from Sears is better than most stuff that you get today.
Oh, yeah.
And that's because, again, we live in an age where resources are quite expensive. And, you know, it, even when we go to the grocery store, you buy some things and you go, you know what, that just doesn't taste like it did when I was a kid. That's because companies are trying to maximize their profits. And when you try to do that, quality is the thing that suffers. And that's even in clothing today. And I want to emphasize that so much of fashion is here today and thrown out tomorrow. And quickly, I want to make sure, I'm going to go ahead. This is one of my closing pointers, but I want to make this. One of the fashion designers who I simply was enthralled by when I was growing up was Yves Saint Laurent. Everybody knows YSL.
Yes.
But in an interview that was he was being interviewed and someone asked him about fashion, and Yves Saint Laurent made this statement. He said, "Fashion fades, but style is eternal." Again, he said, "Fashion fades, but style is eternal." So in essence, what a person needs to do is to discover what is your style, because your style will last for your lifetime. But fashion, it's here today and gone tomorrow.
Exactly. And one of the things that I, you know, at the top of the show, I was mentioning how my mom looked at W and she was very fashion forward. And I never really understood that until I was probably in my late 20s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was like she would buy separates. It was mm-hmm. rare for her to buy a single mm-hmm. item that mm-hmm. was going to be, you know, the thing that she wore. But she mm-hmm. would buy separates that would last mm-hmm. for years.
Okay.
And, so one of the things I like about vintage fashion is if you mm-hmm. look at some of it right now, literally today in 2021, mm-hmm. you would think, oh, that was just made recently. No, mm-hmm. honey, fashion is cyclical. It all comes back. Frighteningly, the things I was wearing in high school have come back. It was ugly then, and it's ugly now.
We talked about this. You know, with fashion, with couturiers and fashion designers, even someone like Yves Saint Laurent, who is considered one of the greatest couturiers ever, I have a couple of pieces of Yves Saint Laurent in my collection, and I use the word covet because again, he was such an influence on me. But mm-hmm. the thing about the quality and the craftsmanship is that it is the quality. A lot of the material that was used back then, the quality today is not the same. That's why those items from these earlier periods are last, because it's kind of like a car from the 60s, or you know, jewelry, or even furniture from those periods, because there was enough time back in those days where attention was given to detail. It was not, as I could consider today, we live in such a microwave society where you put it in and 10 seconds later it's out. But right. back in those days, there was time allotted to ensure, and not only time, but the quality of the materials were so much better. And that's why.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, when you bought a silk blouse back in the 60s and 70s, you mm-hmm. knew it was 100% silk.
Correct.
You knew that it was the buttons were going to be sewn on beautifully and sewn mm-hmm. clearly by hand. You could see mm-hmm. the knots on the back. Mm-hmm. If you know, when it said dry clean only, it meant that.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
You get something now that says dry clean only, you go, yeah. Let me see if I can put it in the wash, you know, and then it turns out just fine, right? So I think a lot of it is a matter of understanding mm-hmm. that quality lasts for decades. I don't mm-hmm. care how you slice it. If it's made right, it's going to last forever. I saw a meme just last week on Facebook that said, you know, the Sunshine Yellow refrigerator from 1970 is still working, and your beautiful brand new side by side broke after 2 years. You know,
it may still work today. That's because, again, quality and craftsmanship, and I tie that all back in since we're talking about fashion, is that, again, the emphasis to the listeners is that you don't, it's in respect of everyone out there, we all have budgets. So with your budget, you can still buy vintage, and that's why I made mention of that coat that I bought from Sears. People, I think many people in the thrift store that I bought, they saw the name Sears, and they're like, I don't want nobody to know that I'm wearing something from Sears. But I was but back in those days, some of those department stores sold very good quality items. Even now when I'm out, I see things from stores, you know, Sears or JCPenney's, which were the thing back in the day. And because I have learned and I know the names of designers and not only the designers, but the retailers. There are, you know, the point that a lot of make is that the things that I focused on in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, a lot of those designers are now dead. And so people today do not know their names unless they are of a certain age and may remember, you know, reading a magazine and seeing that name.
Right.
A lot of another distinction. There is a difference between the word fashion designer and couturier, and I don't want to cause offense to anyone, but there are a lot of people who are fashion designers and they're nice and good at it. But a fashion designer is not necessarily a couturier. A couturier.
Hold that thought before you tell us. I want to take a 30-second break and remind people they can call in and talk to Daryl specifically and ask a question at 516-595-8153. You're listening to Black Bag Productions on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to take a 30-second break. We'll be right back.
Black Bag Productions, located in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area, is a full-service event planning company that treats you and your clients like A-list celebrities. From the selection of your design and creation of your invitation to the last goodbye and thank you for attending, they help you put love into the details without sacrificing quality. Give them a call today at 240-472-9432. Visit blackbagproductionsonline.com and they'll show you how they can create an unforgettable event for you.
And we're back. You're listening to Black Bag Productions on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Kim Moss. I'm your host and the owner of Black Bag Productions. And today we are kicking off our fall series with my good friend Daryl Forney, who's a vintage fashion collector. And I have to tell you, I have learned stuff this morning that, you know how you think you know, but then you're not sure that you know? Well, that's where I was in this last section of the show, and we've talked about what makes couture, what makes haute couture, what makes fashion so fascinating, and that Daryl collects items from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but he's really the kind of person that if you think you know fashion, you don't know fashion till you talk to him. So if you have questions, give us a call at 516-595-8153. Now, before we went to the break, Daryl, you were about to break down a couple of very interesting points about fashion designing and couturiers.
Okay.
Take it away.
Well, again, I want to be careful because I don't want to throw out names per se, but there are some people who are very good fashion designers. They can design a nice outfit, and they can make that outfit. But a couturier is on the level of a great painter, someone like Picasso, someone like Michelangelo or Da Vinci that we've heard about. Even when it comes to jewelry, the names Cartier, the names Van Cleef & Arpels, even in the, you know, for women, Hermès handbags, something like an Hermes handbag. That is the highest level of whatever that is, even when it comes to automobiles. Everybody knows a Rolls Royce. That's pretty much about as high as you can get. But there are other nice cars. You know, a Lexus is a very nice car. And I don't want dispersion. Again, I'm not trying to throw dispersion on anything, but there are levels. So there are people who
I can throw the aspersion for you because you might have that Lexus, but at the end of the day, it's a fancy Toyota.
Okay, as I said, Kim says
just
what you
saying.
Mean.
Okay.
So, but I just want to make, because again, and I say that because again, people who throw this, a lot of people who throw this out and they really don't have, the knowledge or know about what they're talking. So I just, there's a fashion designer is someone who can be very skilled at what they do. But a haute couturier is a master at what he does. Again, he is like a Picasso. He's like a Da Vinci or Michelangelo. And the thing about haute couture is that often is that in the world of fashion is that when you look at a piece, you really need to turn it inside out. It's like jewelry. Since I collect high-end jewelry, I deal with some of the very high-end jewelry establishments in the area, and they've always taught me, look at the underside, because they say if the inside of the jewelry looks as good or better than the outside, that, once again, it goes back to craftsmanship and quality.
Right.
Because Cartier is not going to put its name on a piece of jewelry that looks like, you know, somebody just went outside and melted some gold down and decided to make a ring. Because, and that's one of the things, that's why I haven't so much, other than Yves Saint Laurent, that's why I've not mentioned a lot of names, because people, today, names, there's a lot of being caught up in names, but at the same time, a name does tell you something, because if I go to buy a vintage piece of Cartier, the reason why I'm buying that, or Cartier is nice, but when it comes to vintage jewelry, the jewelry firm of Van Cleef & Arpels is who I really love. And either one of those, Tiffany, Van Cleef & Arpels, Cartier, when you buy those, you're getting pretty much a guarantee that you are buying quality and craftsmanship. And back with fashion, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but is that the pieces I have, again, most of them come from 1970s on back. So you're talking about pieces that are pretty much 45, 50, 60. I even have a piece in my collection that came from a very famous, in her heyday, because she started out in the 20s and died in the 50s, but most people don't know her name. Now, she wasn't a designer per se, but she employed people who were, so she had ideas and was able to communicate those ideas to people who were able to sketch it out. But she's been dead since the 50s, and unless you're in the fashion world, you would not know about her. But I have a piece that came from her establishment, and it dates to 1935. And this is what I'm saying about quality and craftsmanship. I'm certain that the person who designed this came to be the most famous American fashion designer ever, and he's been dead since 1972. But my point that I'm making is that that piece from 1935, which is a simply gorgeous piece for women, it looks as if it were just made yesterday. So we're talking about a piece, 1935, that piece is, what is that? That's 86 years ago that this was made, almost 90 years old. But because of the quality of the material and the craftsmanship that went into making it, it has lasted already nearly 90 years. And if a woman were to put it on today, just as you said, Kim, people would think, oh, that was just made yesterday, or somebody just designed that last year. But no, it's almost 90 years old. So my takeaways that I want to emphasize is, you know, budget considerations are taken into everything, but with your budget, you can still afford quality, vintage, craftsmanship, and quality. That's what I want to emphasize.
Yeah, and so drilling down with that, again, my mom, who is the fashionista that didn't even realize she was a fashionista, mm-hmm. until people started telling her, "Why? How is it you always have beautiful things?" Mm-hmm. Is enamored, I think is the best word, with mm-hmm. Thrift stores.
Correct.
Because yeah. There are times where she will, her favorite, and truly I have no check in the mail, is Second Avenue here mm-hmm. in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And she turned me on to Second Avenue, and she said, mm-hmm. you really should go in there. She said, if you have time, and literally nothing but time, mm-hmm. to just kind of cruise the aisles, mm-hmm. she said, you'll find things that still have tags on it. You'll mm-hmm. find things that are designer wear that you there is no way you could afford to buy now.
True.
There's no way.
Right.
And she was absolutely dead on right. I found a pair of brand spanking new leather pants a couple mm-hmm. of years ago, fully mm-hmm. lined leather pants, let me also emphasize, mm-hmm. that I paid $20 for.
Mm-hmm.
20. Mm-hmm. Keyword there, 20 mm-hmm. and then the decimal. Mm-hmm. And I get more compliments on those pants than I can even begin to tell you. At finding coats, I found a beautiful winter coat that was 100% wool. It
right.
was a Pendleton.
Yes. Right.
And, you know, both of us know, back in the day, if you said you had a Pendleton sweater, Pendleton skirt, Pendleton jacket, Pendleton
right.
anything, people were looking at you saying, oh, your parents got money.
Correct.
You know? And you're going, well, no, I just got this because, you know, my mom liked it,
right.
you know.
That's true.
And I didn't have any idea at the time mm-hmm. that she was buying an item that, no, not every girl was going to be wearing a Pendleton skirt.
Sure, that's
right?
true.
Right?
That's right.
And so when people are looking in thrift stores, What is, you know, let's say they're the amateur vintage fashion person and they're sleuthing for mm-hmm. finding things. What kind of stores would they go into?
Well, I want to be it's kind of segues into my business. I want to say I'm not gonna divulge all my secrets because at the end of the day,
yes.
it's that I do have a business.
And my listeners will appreciate that phrase because my 13-year-old guest a couple months back says, "Well, I'm not gonna tell all of my secrets," and I'm like, "You're 13. I've got secrets
right.
older than you." But
right. well, but in essence, I think everybody knows about.
But for the amateur, where would you send them?
Well, again, I think a thrift store is a great place to start. You know, where I grew up in the South and where I grew up, I don't recall, we didn't have thrift stores. So thrifting mm-hmm. Is something that came late in life for me. And I really, you know, like, boy, how I missed that. Because it's in essence, thrifting is an adventure. And I'll say this, a lot of people have gotten into a lot of different areas. You know, for some people, I have met people where this is now, you know, when they're in thrift stores, this is how they make their livelihood. So yeah, you see,
mm-hmm.
there is competition out there. But in essence,
right.
I think a thrift store is a good place to go. Now, the one thing I will say is that a lot of these thrift stores have caught on that people are coming in there looking for things to resell, no matter what it is. You know, if you've gone in thrift
mm-hmm.
stores and wondered, like, okay, why are they asking me to pay $3.99 for an album, and that's just about as much as I would have paid for in 1975? Because
right.
vintage vinyl is a very hot commodity, and so the stores know that. You see a lot of people in there with books in their scanners. Well, people buying books galore, sending them to Amazon and selling them. And so the thrift stores have become quite aware of this. And in the age of the Internet, God have mercy, you know, the Internet is kind of like a six in one hand and a half a dozen in the other. I love it because it gives me information, but if I'm trying to have a business or I'm trying to get something for a very low price, everybody else knows it in the thrift stores. They've got the same computer, access to Internet. So, you know, that's one thing I will say is that a lot of these thrift stores are quite aware of what people are doing. And some of them are actually thinking that they're department stores.
yeah.
And it's like, wait a minute. you know, you want me to pay this amount of money for something that for the most part was donated to you and is used, but you're asking me to pay a Macy's or Neiman Marcus price. And I've often myself, now this is the one thing I will say, because I've often told a lot of them, you know, I think you better go check the news in the past year or two and see what happened to Macy's and Neiman Marcus, you know, because at a certain point, you know, with any business, a businessman has to be smart because your objective is to stay in business. But, you know, at any point, and it's just the same with me and I'm with my business, is that with my vintage, as I said, everyone has a budget. So for people who are new to vintage and want to know more about it, again, I wanted to do this as a business. I offer consulting services. And that's for the man and the woman because, again, you know, when it comes to fashion, we often talk about women. But no, if you look throughout history, men have enjoyed, you know, fashion. And, you know, when they go out, they want to look just as well, too. And that going out is just, you know, if you're just going to the movies, to the dinner, to the show or whatever, we like to dress too as well. So that's why I started collecting men's fashion. But I want to be something, as I said, a thrift store is a great place to start. But again, it's quality and craftsmanship, because you can pick up two shirts in a store. And as you say, you can just tell by the by looking at them and examining them, and you can see some of them, you know, the threads that they sew the garment with, it could be something that was just made last year and it's already unraveling and stuff like that. You know, you should have seen that. Or you may notice a piece, oh, this is something from, let's say, 1997, that's in better condition than the piece that was just made last year. And it's, again, it's that thing that, you know, profit is so much the motive today that quality has taken the hit and quality suffers.
So I want to kind of pull that thread on, pun intended, pull that thread on quality and mass production. So, mm-hmm. you know, we have folks who are bent on wearing only, quote unquote, designer fashion mm-hmm. or designer mm-hmm. whatever mm-hmm. and have to have the latest Louis Vuitton bag. They have to have mm-hmm. the latest Gucci bag, the latest Michael Kors bag. Mm-hmm. And I want to explain to them and say, so let me tell you that just because you have the latest Louis Vuitton bag does not make you someone who's got serious money when it comes to wearing fashion.
I'm going to let Kim say
right?
that. Again, I'm going to let Kim say that. But one thing this is one of those things I definitely want to inform people about, is when anything becomes the newest craze, what happens?
Yes.
You always have the criminal element out there.
Yes.
So with vintage, you know, just as you say, not so much vintage, but with luxury items, how many of us have gone to a thrift store or gone to a flea market, and you've seen that thing that had Tiffany stamped on it, but you look like, I don't think Tiffany made that. I think Tawny may have made that, but I don't think Tiffany made that. You know?
Yes.
You know?
Unless
you
you're like me and you are a Tiffany girl. And mm-hmm, then, so mm-hmm. you're going to know what to look for. But
you're
wearing Michael Kors does not mean you're wearing Michael Kors couture.
No.
Or just because...
Well, I'm going to say that since you did, I kind of segue back to what I was saying before. Michael Kors, and I don't want to dispersion on Michael Kors, he's a fashion designer. He is not he's not his haute couturier.
No, he is
so,
not.
And again, no dispersions on Michael. But one thing I really want to emphasize is, as I was saying, when anything becomes the new hot thing, you've always got the criminal element who's always watching for it to start their criminal activity. And the criminal element is not necessarily the organized criminal element. It could be the average person who's out there trying to do something that is illegal. So the point that I'm making is that with vintage fashion, particularly the high-end vintage pieces, unfortunately is that people who know that vintage is great, sometimes people, you know, it could be someone in their family or, you know, a grandmother, great aunt or something who has maybe money back in those days and had access to buy good things. People are taking the label out of those things and sewing them into lower quality items.
Yes.
And so, so that really toward the higher, you know, the East, you know, when you're talking about the couture and the haute couture pieces, the East Saint Laurent,
right.
Pierre Balmain, people in the labels from the earlier period, unfortunately, you do have a criminal element that is out there taking the actual label from an actual high-end piece and putting them into lower quality pieces. So that's why when I say you have to become educated, and that's why I say, you know, as myself, someone who's taught himself and learned, I'm able to discern with great confidence, you know, a true vintage piece, who those designers are, and be able to say, because I've seen something where it's like, oh, wait a minute, this is the name that's in it, but I know that designer would not have
that's not the right. No,
because
it does not
fit their aesthetic, you know, because
you know,
when you say Versace, people know kind of back from the days in the 80s and 90s, you know a Versace piece. But I have been out and I have seen the label Versace and piece, and it's like he is spinning in his grave knowing that you did that to
his
name.
Yes.
So
exactly.
Make people be quite aware about that, you know, when you start dealing, you know, like I said, you see fake Gucci watches, fake Louis Vuitton purses. So the higher end item is the same in fashion. You have people out here who are trying to deceive you, to deceive you, to make a quick buck off of you. It's kind of like coins. You know, I collect coins, and there are fake, like back in the day when you had silver dollars and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
There are fakes out there, and you have to be careful. People go to garage sales, or they go to flea markets, and, you know, I actually bought two pieces from someone, and it turned out to be fake, and I keep them as an example to show people. And speaking of that, is that I have a jacket that I bought, paid pennies for it, but it is a fake Giorgio Armani.
Wow.
And in the past year, I can tell you the number of fake Giorgio Armani and fake Versace pieces that I have seen that are out there. Because, again, you know, Armani and Versace are very high-end things. People know they're high-end, but if you're unskilled, you would think, oh, I'm getting a great expensive piece for $10. No, you're getting a knockoff for $10.
For $10, right. You're getting what you pay for.
So quickly, I'm going to ask you a couple of things is that with my business, I do want people to understand and know that because I wanted to be a couturier, I have a niche, you know, an area that I specialize in. And wanting to be a couturier, that kind of focuses on the very formal aspects of dressing. So in my business, I focus on cocktail wear, day dresses, evening wear, and formal wear. And that's my niche. So in essence, if you're, you know, for a lady, you know, if you've got a nice cocktail event, you know, kind of after five, basically it's kind of like that after five, but also too, you have day dresses. And I want to get back to this, is that what they call day dresses, because back in the day, society was kind of segmented and there was a certain role in life that occurred for people. And I think we have to be very careful. When we're looking back in time, we have to kind of understand there are a lot of things that occurred back then that we know were wrong and not, you know, incorrect. But we kind of have to understand what we call the mores of society. Things were done in a certain way, and that was just the way it was. So we can't necessarily take 2021 and put it on 1950 or 1960, because that was what was done, and people accepted that as, you know, how society operated back then.
Right.
So,
and for people who may not understand, the term the ladies who lunch comes from that period.
Okay.
And so that's where the whole day wear concept is, you know, and if you are a child of the 60s and 70s, watching I Love Lucy would give you an example of day wear. Lucy wore day wear like nobody wore day wear. And that, I think, and at the time, you know, people thought, well, yeah, that, okay, she's a housewife and she's looking like that. Then, mm-hmm. Look, Lucy was like, just because I'm a housewife doesn't mean I have to look like I'm, you know, down in the dumps.
Well, it looked like I'm outside having to dig in ditches. I'm not sure how much time we have left, but I want to make sure.
We have about 2 minutes. But okay. I want to hit on first is when we first reconnected, you were telling me about having a launch,
mm-hmm.
and I want to know more about that. And
well,
then the second thing mm-hmm. is how people can look at your beautiful, and I do mean beautiful, collection mm-hmm. online and how they are able to get in touch with you.
Okay. Well, again, you have my business card. It has my email right now, waiting for a new phone, and I may have to have my phone number changed. So the website is Tracy, T-R-A-D-E-S-Y. So if you go to Tracy, and there's a search box. And if in that search box, if you type in the symbol at, you know, shift, then the number 2, at Marchand, M-A-R-C-H-A-N-D, then that will be, they call it your closet. So in essence, in the search box, just type Marchand, M-A-R-C-H-A-N-D. You have my business card, and if there's a way that you can post that, you can go ahead and post it. It kind of needs some correction, but my email is the best way. So I would love to launch my business. Basically, today it's internet. I would love to have a physical store, but I don't have the Rockefeller money for that. But I do hope to possibly launch by next year, and because we're in a pandemic, and I think that, you know, because of restrictions and things, to have a launch means people would have to gather. So we have to wait until we're at a better stage from a public health standpoint. So,
well, maybe we'll be able to talk about a virtual launch at some point.
Sure.
And,
that could be
a great option.
Sure. I don't want to cut you off, but I have got to say this. And I'm an African American. I have no bones about making that known. And there's an aspect of this I wanted to talk about, and that's the power of blacks in the fashion of business and what we've done. And one person I want to say, two things. Most people do not know this. When Jackie Kennedy married John Kennedy, most people do not know that the person who made her wedding dress was a black fashion designer named Ann Lowe, L-O-W-E. And the thing about it, 10 days before Jackie's wedding, Ann Lowe's basement flooded and destroyed the original wedding dress for Jackie Kennedy. And in 10 days, she and her assistants were able to recreate the dress, and Jackie did not know anything about it.
And that is the original Black Girl Magic, folks.
I know we've got to go, but secondly, Eunice Johnson, back in the day, everybody remembers Ebony and Jet magazine. But Eunice Johnson has not been given her due because Eunice Johnson brought fashion and what we could call couture and haute couture to the black market. When she started out, a lot of the designers did not want to sell to her and refused to even let her come to the shows. The names that we know today, these designers, because again, that was what was being done back then. It was not great,
right.
But they got smart because what it is, word got out that here's a black woman with money just like the rich white society women.
Mm-hmm.
And as we all know, money talks better than anything. And
it
Eunice Johnson with Jet and Ebony brought high fashion to the black market. And I'll close on this. She became very close to Yves Saint Laurent because Yves Saint Laurent was one of the designers who, you know, initially didn't sell to her, but he got smart. Yves Saint Laurent was born in Africa, and that's a whole other story. But he started selling to her. But Eunice Johnson has not received her just due because she, through Ebony and Jet and her Ebony fashion fairs, brought high fashion to the black population that gave blacks an exposure to really what couture and haute couture is. And she really deserves a movie or something done about her and the whole Jet Ebony enterprise. But as I said,
and it makes you wish that she was still around today because I think she probably would just fall out in seeing
I know
some of the things that are out there.
I know we're over time, but I do want to close on this. And this is to the listeners out there, because, again, my point is to share information with you. If you have older members of your family, men and particularly women, your mother, your grandmother, your aunties, even neighbors you may be close to, often what happens is that when some of those individuals are older and they're moving in with you, or they have to be placed into a nursing home or long-term care facility, or they may die, we are at that point you are grieving, and you're grieving the loss of someone that you love. But at the same time, too, what happens is that you have to possibly, move things out of that house because you need to sell it, or you have to move that person out of their apartment to come live with you. And that's a very hard period in people's lives. And so your focus is on that loss, that grief, or having to just deal with having to take care of someone. And what happens is that the time is not necessarily given to what happens to their belongings and effects. So my point is, you have to be careful that you're not, if you're giving things away to thrift stores, or if you're giving things, or you're just throwing things out, you may be throwing away something that may have value. And that's where you really need someone to help and assist you. And real quick, I did some estate management. I had a very wealthy family who I was assisting. There was only one person, one child, who had inherited a multi-million-dollar estate. They had so many deadlines they had to meet. And I helped. That person was getting ready to donate a painting to a thrift store. And I said, let me see that. And I said, you can't do that. They're like, why? I said, because that little bitty painting that was about five inches by 7 inches was worth between $50,000 and $70,000 that they were about to give
away.
Oh,
my gosh. Oh,
so,
my Kim, gosh.
I know we've got to go. If you can post my business card so people can have my email.
Most definitely.
I appreciate you for giving me the time. Maybe I can come back because there's a lot more to discuss. But I want to thank the listeners. And as I say, become an educated consumer in order to be the best customer. And I want you to be my best customer.
And we definitely will make sure we have Daryl back, because I want to get back into the Met Gala. I want to get into Hollywood and all those kinds of things that are unique about fashion. And when you take time to look at some of the uniqueness of clothing items, designers, all of that, you will find that there are more things that are very different about quality today as opposed to quality from yesterday. So with that, I want to thank Daryl for being my guest today on our return show, and let you know that we will have our regulars back, Debbie J, who will be talking with us about Cabby Fashion and the new fall lineup for Cabby, which I got to tell you, folks, is gorgeous and reasonably priced and beautifully made and fits to size. It's fantastic. I don't have any other words. I don't have enough adjectives to describe that. We'll also be talking with our good friend, Benay Fowler, and the We Are Listening crew. They will be back in October, and we will have them tell us about their We Are Listening update. So please be sure you tune into that. Now at 11:30 today, going to do a special 15 minutes so you can have a sneak peek into what I've got coming up this fall and what I've got coming for holiday and for 2022. So with that, again, thanks to my guest, Daryl Forney, for talking about vintage fashion and giving us a lesson on couture and haute couture. I hope you have a great Saturday, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Black Bag Productions, located in the metropolitan Washington, D.C. area, is a full-service event planning company that treats you and your clients like A-list celebrities. From the selection of your design and creation of your invitation to the last goodbye and thank you for attending, they help you put love into the details without sacrificing quality. Give them a call today at 240-472-9432. Visit blackbagproductionsonline.com, and they'll show you how they can create an unforgettable event for you.